Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Deep left field! This is what it is! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Hey there. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, May 24th. I am Frank Sanfield, joined by Scott White and the returning Chris P. Towers. Today on the show, we are going to get into Bobby Miller's pretty interesting, pretty good debut, I would say. One hitter to buy, one hitter to sell, pitchers coming back down to earth, and much more. Before we get started, please like this video and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. If you're listening on the audio side, download, follow, and leave a five-star rating on Apple or Spotify. Thank you very much. Chris, you are back. How's the wedding life?
I feel like I've been the returning Chris Towers, like,
true,
four different times this season already, and I've got one more trip. I apologize for how much I've been off the show. Just a lot of people getting married, you know. I thought I was past this. Now I'm in my mid-30s, but it's wedding season again. But I'm back. And sorry, what was the question?
Just how was the wedding life? Is that a new hat?
Yeah, nice I found hat. It. I was in South Florida. I found it at a Marshall's. Apparently, Marlins hats are on clearance in Miami. So, you know, had to grab this one. $10. Man, love you, to see it.
You always find the coolest stuff on clearance when you're in Florida.
That's what I do, man. I go to South Florida and I hit up the Marshall's and the Pembroke Lakes Mall, and I'm just just finding deals, baby.
All the local spots.
Yeah. Oh, shouts to the Lid store in Pembroke Pines.
Gosh. You know, I was actually over there when I met up with Scotty. We had some dinner together and I didn't know to look around or else.
Ask me next time you're down there. I'll give you the details, the deets.
Yeah. Speaking of local Florida teams, man, I know the Heat lost, but them and the Florida Panthers, it's a pretty interesting time there in South Florida. Anywho, let's jump in.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Let's start with Scott. Who you got?
All right. Well, let's begin with Bobbo, old Bobby Miller. Young Bobby Miller, I should say, making his major league debut against a very good lineup, the Braves lineup. He delivered some very good results. He lasted 5 innings, only 1 earned run allowed, struck out 5, walked just 1. And that's, you know, for a major league debut, especially compared to what we've seen from his teammate Gavin Stone, what we've seen from Brandon Pfaadt, two pitching prospects who were rated similarly by most rank lists. This was better. This was better than what they've delivered. It was a fine, fine debut, especially given, again, the strength of his competition. Now you dig a little deeper in the numbers, and they're more just kind of okay rather than really, really impressive. So he had 10 swinging strikes on 95 pitches. That's okay. The average exit velocity he allowed was 93.4 miles per hour. So that's less than okay. That's some really hard contact Bobby Miller was giving up. Again, facing a lineup that generally makes really hard contact. So maybe you give him a pass for that. I think the most interesting thing Bobby Miller did here was throw his fastball just 31% of the time. He featured both his slider and changeup nearly as often as his fastball. And that's pretty good for a young pitcher, especially one who throws 100 miles per hour. He wasn't just trying to rifle in 100 mile per hour fastballs and thinking that would work. So that's maybe reason to be encouraged beyond just the stat line. I think if nothing else, we can say with this performance from Bobby Miller that he's probably surpassed Gavin Stone now in the Dodgers pecking order. Of course, Stone got the first chance, and he was the one when Dustin May went down. Okay, Gavin Stone's going to replace him. And then Julio Urías also went down. Okay, I guess we got to pull the lid off Bobby Miller too. But you know, when Arias returns, and it sounds like it'll be in fairly short order, I would guess Stone would be the one shipped out rather than Miller. And so if you want to take a flyer on Miller, I think there's more justification to do so now. I still don't think it's a must. I still think in most leagues there's probably at least one other pitcher who I would be more interested in adding than Miller. But there is definite upside here.
I hear you're saying, Scott, with the average exit velocity, again, some hard contact here. 10 swinging strikes on 95 pitches, that's an okay number. But averaging 99 on the fastball and a diverse pitch mix, too. I mean, he threw five different pitches between 7 and 31% of the time. Had that slider that he used 26%, changeup 24%. He's 51% rostered. Looks like if he does stick in the rotation, which I'm pretty sure he will. He lines up for the Nationals and the Yankees next week as a two-star pitcher. I don't know. I was a little bit more, I guess, impressed by what I saw here from Bobby Miller in this start. Trying to figure out where he ranks among all the rookie starting pitchers. And this is just my ranking. And then, Chris, I'll throw it over to you. Get your thoughts. Tanner Bibee, Bryce Miller, Eury Pérez, and Taj Bradley. I have those four still ahead of Bobby Miller after this debut. But I would put Bobby Miller ahead of Logan Allen, Matthew Liberatore, Gavin Stone, and Brendan Faught. What do you think about where I've kind of sandwiched Bobby Miller in that mix?
That's perfectly reasonable. I think like Bryce Miller's a few more starts into his career, so I think it's reasonable to side with him, although I have a lot of questions about how sustainable what Bryce Miller's doing. So I think right in the middle of that range makes a lot of sense for Bobby Miller and someone who should be added, I think, in pretty much all leagues. If he hasn't been, he's what, 41% rostered, something like that.
Bobby Miller?
51.
He's up to 51%.
Yeah. So okay. should be near universal just because let's see what happens. Anytime you see a pitcher with, you know, a 99 mile per hour average fastball velocity, it's just like, we'll just add him and see what happens, especially one with, you know, good secondaries like he showed. It wasn't like an overwhelmingly dominant start, you know, given the quality of the stuff and the fact that it's the first time hitters are seeing him. You would hope for more whiffs than this, but I think that's a little nitpicky. So I'm pretty impressed by what we saw.
Scott, the two names that I keep bringing up the past couple days whenever we bring up waiver wire pitchers are James Paxton and Michael Kopech. I think I would take Paxton ahead of Bobby Miller. I don't think I would take Kopech, though.
So when we're putting actual names to this, I mean, I didn't mean to sound like discouraged by Miller's debut here. That wasn't necessarily the tone I was going for. I agree with that assessment. Paxton was actually who I was thinking of when I said there might still be a pitcher I like more than Bobby Miller on the waiver wire. I would take Paxton over Miller. I would take Miller over Kopech, just like you. And I think the four rookies that you rank Miller ahead of, I'm right with you. The four that you put him behind, I might put those in a slightly different order. But the point is Miller's right in the middle of those nine rookie pitchers.
All right.
I don't think there's any question I'd take Bobby Miller over Michael Kopech. I don't know. Maybe you guys are more optimistic about him. I know
the same thing.
I don't know what you guys said about Michael Kopech coming off his last start. I know it was very good, but okay. I That one's not even close for me.
It wasn't just very good, Chris. I mean, that was an amazing start.
It was a really, really good start. We'll go with two reallys to describe his most recent start. I don't think Michael Kopech's good at all.
You might be right. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how he follows up after that. But obviously, someone who had some pedigree himself, and, you know, I don't want to ignore an amazing start like that. Another name I had written down here was Graham Ashcraft. Another bad start. I just want to get this out of the way. We're okay dropping him for, like, any of these names that we're talking about, right?
If you hadn't done it already, then
drop him for JP France.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
All right. Chris is completely out. I mean, I guess
it's fine. Like,
that's not actually to say I think JP France is better than Graham Ashcraft. It's to say drop him for the next interesting looking pitcher who's available at this point.
Ashcraft is up to a 5.57 ERA and a 1.48 whip on the season. Still 63% rostered. I think some people might have held on for the two-star week. And if you did so, A, I'm sorry. And B, you could drop Graham Ashcraft. Chris, oh my goodness gracious, for you.
Yeah, I'm going with Nathan Eovaldi, who was that his second or third complete game?
Second.
It's been absolutely incredible. And, you know, not a lot of whiffs in this one, which I think is a little disappointing given, or not a lot of strikeouts given what we've seen lately. But, you know, you can't exactly argue with a complete game, one run outing. He is still throwing his splitter more often. That's been a big key for him. 31% usage. It was basically tied with his fastball for his most used pitch. It's been a very, very good pitch for him. He's generating a lot of weak contact with it. He is generating a 36% swing and miss rate. You know, the thing with Eovaldi, God, I mean, going back a decade at this point, has always been he's one of those guys that looks like he should be a lot better than he is. And he's been pretty good at times, but especially when it comes to the strikeouts, the stuff always looks better than the results. And maybe the splitter is helping the results catch up to the stuff. Last season, he had a 39% whiff rate with it, throwing it 20% of the time. This season, he's up to about 30% of the time and still getting a bunch of whiffs with it. You know, very healthy 36% whiff rate. So I don't want to say for sure that this is real from Nathan Eovaldi, and certainly the, you know, 110 ERA over the course of the month of May, and even better than that, including the last start of April. Certainly not going to sustain that, but feel very confident in Nathan Eovaldi being a good pitcher moving forward.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too. He's gone 8+ innings in 4 of his last 5 starts, a 2.60 ERA, 0.97 whip, right around a strikeout per inning so far, and immaculate control so far this season for Nathan Eovaldi as well. 2 years removed from finishing top 4 in Cy Young Award voting, so it's not crazy that we've seen, you know, really, really good production from Nathan Eovaldi in the past as well. Can he stay healthy? I think that's a different conversation. Scott, I see that you updated your rankings 2 hours ago when we're recording this. You have Nathan Eovaldi up at SP38. Did you make that ranking change while he was pitching? After, did you see this performance before you updated these ranks?
I was unaware of today's performance.
Okay.
And I moved him up to 38. It's an interesting case, right? Because, okay, you say he's pitched well before. He was fourth in Cy Young voting in 2021. That was
shocking.
Because he had a 3.75 ERA that year. And his career best ERA is 3.72, which was in 2020, so we even count it. So he's been, at his best, a high 3s ERA guy, and now here he is sitting with a 2.60 ERA. And by the way, I mean, most of the ERA estimators back it up. He entered today with a 2.89 xERA, a 2.46 FIP, 3.24 xFIP. Chris mentioned the splitter use. He's also thrown his cutter a lot more this year. So he has a lot of hard pitches, and he may have just found the right pitch mix to optimize his entire arsenal here at age 33. And that's the other thing. Like, this is a guy at the tail end of his career, and we're asking him to do things he's never done before. It would be a very Lance Lynn like breakout. So, like, it's not unprecedented. It was the same sort of thing. Lance Lynn has a few pitches, all of them hard, but you know, just finding the right mix of them helped to bring out this potential he didn't show before. He went from being a pretty good pitcher to a great pitcher for a few years there. And so we're asking Nathan Eovaldi to do the same. It's possible. He also has a pretty extensive injury history. So yep. How much do we factor that in when we're just thinking, okay, maybe is this a sell high candidate? Like, I'm not going to call him a sell high candidate in the same way I called, you know, Graham Ashcraft a sell high candidate a few weeks ago, or Anthony Desclafani, Bryce Elder sell high candidates a couple weeks ago. Because I do think, like, if you stick with Eovaldi, I think there's a reasonable chance he could be really good for you, but he's probably not an ace in the long run. So if you can get an ace return for him in a pitching starved environment, I'd consider it.
It's how I feel kind of about Bryce Miller, where like I believe in the skill set to a certain extent. I don't think it's a superstar skill set. I think it's a good skill set.
The underlying numbers kind of say that Nathan Eovaldi is pitching like a superstar pitcher. I mostly agree with everything that you said, Scott. If I'm looking to flip him, it has to be, you know, entering Tuesday, he was the SP10 in head-to-head points and SP13 in Roto. So you need to get like top 15, top 20 SP return to trade Nathan Eovaldi right now. And if not, I'm just holding on and seeing how long this lasts. And, you know, I haven't updated the rankings yet, but I think I'm going to get him closer to like the top 30 in that Logan Webb, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby. I'm going to move Chris Sale up a little bit. So I think he's going to be in like the back half of that range. And that feels right, just based on how well Nathan Eovaldi has pitched this season.
Would you give up Nathan Eovaldi for Luis Severino?
They're kind of similar, right, with the injury history.
Mm-hmm. Would you give him up for Tyler Glass now, who's coming back?
I don't think I would.
I don't think so. I think I just hold Eovaldi over both of those guys. But that, I think they're all going to be ranked in the same range, like that 25 to 30 SP range.
Right. I have him just behind them now, and I think I'm with you, Frank, that I'm going to move him up with this latest start.
I'm doing the same thing.
Right ahead of them to the very early 30s in my starting pitcher rankings.
And for those watching on YouTube, I'm wearing a Texas Rangers hat, but I can assure you I'm not some kind of Texas Rangers homer. I just really like what I've seen from Nathan Eovaldi so far.
See, now I just want to ask you, like, Nathan Eovaldi or the Mariners duo, Kirby and Gilbert?
I think it's kind of a wash, right? Like, why would you make that move? They all seem just really good, you know?
I mean, I'm going to rank the Mariners duo ahead of him. So
I think so too.
If you're holding my feet to the fire, then I guess I would trade Eovaldi.
I am.
But that's,
I am holding
that's
your feet to the fire.
That's not my idea of a sell high trade with Eovaldi.
Yeah. Okay. I guess a sell high would be like if you could turn him into Aaron Nola. Something like that. Or Sandy Alcantara.
Dylan Cease.
we'll talk about Cease in a little bit. I don't.
Time to update those rankings then.
I think it would have to be Cease and another piece if I'm trading away Nathan Eovaldi right now. Speaking of trading, I wanted to bring up a potential buy high hitter. And it's Seiya Suzuki. It's not anything that he did in this game that made me say, oh my goodness gracious. But what he's done recently, over his last 11 games, he's batting .350 with 5 homers, a steal, and a 94 mile per hour average exit velocity. Obviously, it's a little fun with small sample sizes so far. But if you look at just the season-long numbers, he started the season a little bit later because he was dealing with an injury. But the walks are up. The strikeouts are, they're up a tad. They're close to the same as they were last year. A lot more line drives. The hard contact is up. And I really like the way that Seiya Suzuki ended last season. And Chris, I know before the injury, you and I were both excited about Seiya Suzuki this year. I think I had him ranked as a top 30 outfielder before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And the way that he's playing right now, the way that that Cubs lineup, frankly, is playing so far this season, I would be looking to buy high on Seiya Suzuki. I can make an argument that, you know, when I do my outfield ranks tomorrow, I think I'm going to get him close to, if not inside of my top 30 or maybe even top 25 outfielders right now.
Yeah, he was already top 30 for me. It's more a question of, I'll move him ahead of Anthony Santander, Chris Bryant, Christian Yelich. I think I can move him ahead of. Then I've got like Byron Buxton, Corbin Carroll, Teoscar Hernandez, Starling Marte, right around 20. And it's like, that's tougher to do. I really like Suzuki. I think he's got a decent ceiling, but certainly don't think he has a higher ceiling than any of those four. I think the highest I can move him is right around 25.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense too. And it's funny you bring up that group of outfielders. Scott and I were just talking about that same exact group last night and how they're pretty hard to rank right now, right? It's Kyle Schwarber and Starling Marte. And these are guys that have proven track records, but they're off to slow starts. So it's, you know, I don't really want to be too aggressive in moving them down yet. But yeah, I think I'm going to move Seiya Suzuki inside my top 30 outfielders. And he's someone that I would be looking to buy high on right now. I think someone you might want to sell high on, Scott. I know it feels like none of us are actually believers in this player, but he's off to a great start. It's Harrison Bader, who went 2-for-4 with his fifth home run in just 20 games so far. Since returning from the IL, he's batting .290. He also has three steals. He has an .880 OPS, a career-best 10% strikeout rate. He's putting the ball in the air a ton so far this season. 55% fly ball rate. His career mark is 41%, so we're up like 14 percentage points compared to his career. And the problem here is that the quality of contact is still really, really poor. I mean, 83.4 mile per hour average exit velocity, 22% hard hit rate. I think it's obviously it's nice what he's done so far, but I don't think it's sustainable. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, if obviously he's a light hitter in terms of he doesn't make especially hard contact. He is doing the things that a light hitter can do to overcome that and still provide power by elevating and pulling the ball as much as he is. And, you know, it's something that started for him. Well, I haven't actually looked at what the pull rates and the fly ball rates are, but since joining the Yankees last year, we've seen this uptick in power from Bader, of course, most famously in the playoffs last year. So, you know, maybe there is something to it, but I'd be more inclined to say he's not going to sustain this pace. The problem with calling him a sell high is I think it'd have to be a pretty deep league for you to pull it off. This is the point I brought up yesterday with guys like Jaron Duran and I don't know, Taylor Walls. Like, it's easy to say, okay, they're not going to sustain these numbers, but their roster rate, like Bader right now is at 76%. Like, he's not everybody's come around to the idea of even rostering him. So how are you going to trade him?
Right.
You know, and I think Christopher Morel just got over that hurdle. He barely has gotten to a point where he's gone from, okay, must add to sell high ? And generally people aren't inclined to trade for players that they could have just picked up yesterday. So I think it's a hard case to make that you're actually going to get that great of a return for Harrison Bader. Doesn't hurt to try though.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna steal a Scott White bit. He can't keep getting away with it. That's how I feel about Harrison Bader. I don't know. Maybe playing in Yankee Stadium and the swing changes he's made can sustain themselves, but I don't know. I think if he keeps swinging like this, he's probably more like a 230 hitter than a 290 hitter. And I don't think he's going to hit for enough power to make it worth having a 230 hitter. He gives me strong Kevin Biggio vibes, but I've been wrong many times before.
I did read an article earlier in the season that he's using a new bat this season. It's like one of those axe handle bats that.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently,
I do like that. That worked wonders. Axe handle bat. Apparently, one of my softball teammates has one. I like it.
Oh, no, I tried it. I didn't like it, man. It was kind of weird. Maybe I got to give it another chance. But in the article, it said that Harrison Bader picked this bat up from Pete Alonso because they went to college together, University of Florida. And I don't know if this is completely the reason for the power breakout, but it could be something. It's clearly a change. Scott, you mentioned.
I went down that rabbit hole with Brendan Donovan earlier this year. Need I remind you? It's gone well.
Yeah.
It hasn't gone well.
No,
I don't know if you detect the sarcasm there.
It has not. You mentioned the name Christopher Morel. I think we should mention. I mean,
incredible.
He's done it again. It's now 9 home runs in 12 games so far. And, you know, we were begging you to pick him up. And obviously the roster rate is up now. And, you know, if you lost Jazz Chisholm, we kind of pumped him up as like the perfect replacement. And look, he's not going to hit whatever. 80 home runs this year, but he is impacting the ball really hard. And when he connects, it's going a long way right now. So,
yeah. So like he has graduated from the point where we're just like Adam to now Should you trade him? Should you capitalize on this unsustainable pace by cashing in or cashing out? They both sort of mean the same thing, cash in, cash out. On it by swinging a deal. And I actually wrote 1,400 words on the subject yesterday, so you can go read all about that. It's a really interesting case because, of course, we've talked about how Christopher Morel, in addition to hitting all these home runs, he's striking out a crap load, as he has throughout his career. Last year in the majors, even in the minors when he was crushing it, he was striking out more than 30% of the time. But the strikeout rate he has right now, only one player who had minimum 300 plate appearances last year. Only one player had a strikeout rate as high as Morel's right now. It was Joey Gallo, who hit 160. It's the list of players who are productive with the strikeout rate, even over 30, which, you know, it would take a lot of improvement from Morel to get that point, is very short. The way he impacts the ball, it's possible he could overcome that and settle in as maybe like a 260 hitter. And if he does that, the power of speed is enough to make him a genuine standout in fantasy as a 260 hitter. You know, maybe like a, I don't know, like a Byron Buxton type, something like that. Okay, so I'll sum it up this way. The way I view Christopher Morel right now is he's a lottery ticket who five of the numbers have already come up. So that sixth number, you know, we're waiting to see if that comes up and he's the real deal. The odds are still against it happening.
Yeah.
But at this point, it might be worth it just to see how it plays out, knowing it, the odds are against it, but you have a really nice prize if the numbers do turn up.
I've made the Javier Baez comp a few times since Morel got called up. And it's actually, if you look at the spray charts, it's very Javier Baez-esque. It's home runs a lot to the power alleys. It's not just like pulled balls. He's crushing them to deep parts of the field. And it's not 2018 MVP candidate Javier Baez. It's not going to be that kind of player. But, you know, you look at Javier Baez and like he struck out 33% of the time in 2021. He hit 31 homers, stole 18 bases, hit 265. I'm not saying he's going to do that. That would be asking a lot. But that kind of outcome is, I think, within the realm of possibility. You know, maybe it's more like a 240 hitter. Maybe it's more like 25 homers or 25 homer pace the rest of the way. He might get to 25 homers at this pace just without being a good power hitter the way he's playing. But, you know, that kind of performer, a very, very good shortstop slash second baseman slash outfielder, because he's eligible to all of those, right?
Just second in outfield,
just,
I believe.
Just second in outfield? Okay. Yeah. I'm updating my rankings now as we're talking, and I'm moving him ahead of Cody Bellinger. I'm moving him ahead of Yoshida, Verdugo, Nimmo, just because those guys are all boring high floor guys.
Yoshida's been really good.
You're moving Morel up higher than I am.
Okay.
I think I'm going to get him in the top
36 for me right now.
I'm going to get him inside of the top 36 as well. But I have Yoshida at round like 25. So I've moved him up like a bunch.
Yeah, he's not that high for me.
Yet. I think getting Morel inside the top 40 outfielders at least. All right, let's take our first break. And when we return, I've got a crazy game from the Blue Jays. They put up 20 runs in that one. I've got some waiver wire pitchers. We'll do all of that right after this. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Quick reminder to sign up for our Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter. Dan Schneier does a great job with it. You can head over to cbssports.com/newsletters, punch in your email address, and press sign up. It's easy as that. It's free, and you get the latest news and articles delivered right to your inbox. If you're watching live on YouTube, you can scan the QR code. That will also take you to the website where you can sign up again for the FBT newsletter. The Blue Jays put up 20 runs on 27 hits on Tuesday night against the Tampa Bay Rays. They did do some damage against some position players who were pitching in that one. George Springer went 4-for-5 with a triple and his 7th home run. He is coming around over the past 2 weeks or so. Vlad Jr. went 3-for-6 with his 8th home run. He added 6 RBI. Matt Chapman, 2-for-5 with his 7th homer, 114 miles per hour off the bat, added 3 RBI as well. Danny Jansen went 3-for-6 with his 6th home run. And while we're on Jansen, no Alejandro Kirk in this game. Kirk has now sat out 6 of the last 11 games for the Blue Jays. He's batting .234, which is 2 home runs. And Scott, I know we spoke about him recently. We said that, you know, we'd drop him for Francisco Alvarez. I still kind of have my reservations because I don't trust the Mets to do the right thing. But yeah, if you play in a one-catcher league, this is getting pretty ugly for Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah. I don't think there's any reason to have him in a one-catcher league at this point, unless it's like a 16-team one-catcher league.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Who pitched in this slugfest? Jose Berríos was great, again, at Tampa Bay. 7 innings, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. Only had 6 swinging strikes, but did a great job limiting the hard contact. And over his last 8 starts, Berríos has a 2.88 ERA and a 1.10 whip, right around a strikeout per inning, keeping the walks and the hard contact down. It's been a key for Jose Berríos this year. Taj Bradley, on the other side, kind of a mixed outing here. Only goes 4 innings. He allows 9 hits, 4 earned runs. Obviously, that line so far is bad. 7 strikeouts to 0 walks, again, in only 4 innings pitched. 14 swinging strikes on 80 pitches. And the cutter was up, you know, 1.2 miles per hour in this start. The ERA is up to 4.44, but the underlying numbers still look really, really good. Chris, anything you'd like to add here on Berríos, who's been pitching very well, and kind of a mixed bag performance from Taj Bradley? You are muted, sir.
I have less to say about Berríos just because he's just kind of bewildering in a lot of respects. And just like there doesn't seem to be like a super obvious explanation for why he was so horrible last season, there doesn't really seem to be a super obvious explanation for why he's been so good lately. So I'm not 100% sure what to make of that. Bradley, you know, we talked about the rookie pitchers earlier, and I think like you put him in that Bobby Miller range, and I certainly wouldn't drop Bradley for Bobby Miller, but it's hard for me to say with any degree of confidence whether I would rather have Bradley than Miller right now, just because those first 3 starts were so good when he first got called up. Then he gets sent down and everything just becomes a mess. And it's been a little messy since he's gotten recalled. And now we've got, you know, Tyler Glass now potentially coming back as potentially as soon as this weekend. And so is Taj Bradley going to stay in the rotation? They've had a lot of injuries, and Tyler Glasnow certainly has a history of injuries of his own, but it wouldn't surprise me if Bradley got sent down. So I want to hang on to Taj Bradley. I certainly don't want to drop him, but my degree of confidence in him has certainly been shaken.
They did say, Kevin Cash, the manager, did say after this last Bradley call-up, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he gave the impression it was for the long haul this time. Like they wanted him to settle in. And they also sent down Yonny Chirinos that same day. And Chirinos was one of the pitchers who was, when they sent Bradley down the first time, was getting a turn in his place. So I think that can, I think they'll keep him up with Glass now coming back. Obviously can't guarantee it. But I share some of your concerns in terms of, I have less confidence in Bradley now than I did when he got sent down in the first place.
Looking at the Rays roster resource page on Fangraphs, they have Tyler Glass now slotted in for his spot in the rotation. But that also still includes Bradley, Josh Fleming, Zach Eflin, and Shane McClanahan. So I think Taj is going to stick around. You can never know for sure with Tampa Bay, but just given all the injuries that they have, I think he's probably going to remain in the Rays rotation. A few waiver wire pitchers to talk about from Tuesday. Brian Bello, another strong start at the Angels. 7 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts to 0 walks. He had 12 swinging strikes on 98 pitches. And over his last 5 starts, a 2.57 ERA and a 1.25 whip. Griffin Canning was on the other side there. He got back on track. 7 shutout innings with 5 strikeouts. Marco Gonzalez turned in a quality start against the Oakland A's. 6 innings, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts. And J.P. France, who Chris would drop Graham Ashcraft for, had a solid start at the Brewers. 5 2/3, 2 runs, 1 earned, 8 strikeouts to 1 walk. Scott, what do you think about this group here? Bello, Canning, Marco Gonzalez, and J.P. France.
I think the only one that's really interesting is Bello.
Agreed.
Who, I mean, you mentioned the numbers. His last 5 starts, the 2.57 ERA. He does like 2 of the best things a pitcher can do. His swinging strike rate entering this start was 12.2%. And that's about what it was in this start too. So I guess it's still there. His ground ball rate, 61.9% entering this start. That's like Framber Valdez levels. So an elite ground ball pitcher who also misses bats at a pretty good rate. I mean, that kind of sounds like Framber Valdez, doesn't it? We don't see that combination very often. Bello does have some issues throwing strikes. That's why the whip is so high. During that 5-start stretch, I believe he had a start where he walked 5. His strike percentage on the year is only 63, which is below average. So that is something that's holding Bello back. But he's a young pitcher who appears to be trending the right direction, and there's a lot to like about him. We were talking up Tanner Houck yesterday after he had a good start. And I don't know. It's a close call between the two. Houck doesn't have the extreme ground ball rate Bello does, but he's a pretty good ground ball pitcher himself and has been an even better bat misser than Bello. Say that 5 times fast. I think I have a slight preference for Houck, but they're both rostered in less than 50% of CBS Sports leagues, and I could see that changing in short order. We should probably mention France here because he did have a good start, and he's really only had 1 bad start since getting called up. It was an awful start his last time out. I don't see a lot to get excited about. You know, he doesn't get a lot of swinging strikes and doesn't get a lot of ground balls. It's just the opposite of Bello. He's gotten burned by home runs. And I don't see enough upside here to justify the downside with J.P. France.
Chris, who would you rather have? Brian Bello, who's 43% rostered, or Bobby Miller, who's 51%?
I think I'd rather have Bobby Miller. I guess there's less certainty about the role long term. You know, Bello, the Red Sox did just move Nick Pivetta back into the bullpen, which, you know, say what you want about Nick Pivetta, but he was adamant that he didn't want to be pitching out of the bullpen. So they're accepting some friction from that in that regard in order to make that move. So, you know, there's that. That's at least somewhat of a commitment to Houck and Bello. So I think you can make that case. I think Miller's probably the more talented pitcher.
I think it's close. I really like Brian Bello, and he had some prospect pedigree too last year, and he got called up, and he throws hard, and he's got a changeup and a slider, and worked out with Pedro Martinez in the offseason and stuff, so I don't know.
It's clear. I'll put it this way. If you're deciding between Miller and Bello on the waiver wire, all the buzz is with Miller right now.
Yeah.
I was looking at most viewed pitchers, starting pitchers. I was isolating just the pitchers, not most viewed players. Bello didn't even appear. He wasn't on the 2 columns that show on the roster trends page.
People are
Nobody's
sleeping.
Looking at Bello right now.
They're sleeping.
So, yeah, well, yeah, sure, he's a genuine sleeper right now. But that you can take advantage of everybody sleeping if you're having to figure out how to make use of very few roster spots and go Miller instead.
The stakes are lower.
Yep. That's
fair. Passing on Bayo.
That is fair. Let's talk about a few waiver wire hitters here. Two outfielders that stood out to me. Michael Conforto stays hot. He went 2-for-5 with his 10th home run, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. And now in the month of May, he's only batting .235, but that comes with 6 homers and an .858 OPS. He's got the strikeouts down. In April, it was 33% strikeout rate. It's now right around 20% in the month of May. Again, that's Michael Conforto. Lane Thomas, who we've talked about a lot recently, he went 2-for-4 with his 7th home run, and it just feels like he should be rostered in more than 50% of leagues. Scott, what do you think? Lane Thomas versus Conforto, if you're looking for an outfielder. It's probably a shallow league.
Yeah, I mean, Conforto has more upside, I would say, and he's been showing it recently with this nice home run binge he's been on. Obviously, missed a lot of time with injury prior to this year, so you could understand him being slow to come around. I think Lane Thomas, his utility is pretty limited outside of 5 outfielder leagues, and 5 outfielder leagues probably covers the 50% that he's rostered in.
Yeah.
Let's see. Average points per game, if we're thinking like a points league context, 2.78. That's pretty good. It's not must roster territory, but it puts him in the same range as...
Worth pointing out, I think we probably all agree he's probably playing a little over his head at this point.
Lane Thomas, yeah.
Yeah, like averaging 278 points per game while playing probably better than he likely will moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, the fact he's hitting almost 300, I mean, that's...
250 XBA.
But there is a power-speed combo there that he hasn't sustained for... long stretch. Like he's had these little bursts the last two seasons that make you wonder if there's more. So I'm not sure we've seen Lane Thomas have his career year yet, and maybe this is it. But the point is it's a low ceiling player, so I don't think you're missing out on much if you just don't have room for him.
All right, Matt McClain went 1-for-3 with a walk and hit his first career home run. He is just 51% rostered. Chris, do you think that number should be higher? Because, you know, if Matt McClain comes anywhere close to the upside that he showed in the minors, then he should be a contributor regardless of format, head-to-head points, and in any type of roto or categories league.
And the thing he has going for him in both formats is, I believe, 7 straight games batting second for the Reds. I don't know if he's batted second in every game, but he's been up there, and that's a big deal. You know, that means an extra plate appearance per game, you know, over batting at the bottom of the lineup, more or less. So I do think that's, was he at 51% rostered? That should definitely be higher. I think he's worth rostering in pretty much any format, less so, you know, certainly not a must roster player in points leagues, but I think he's, you know, worth having around for sure.
Worth pointing out that he has a 41% strikeout rate in 7 games, small sample size, but 13 strikeouts in 32 plate appearances. Obviously, that's very high, but again, pretty massive upside there for Matt McClain. Scott, in one catcher leagues, let's say we're looking to drop Alejandro Kirk. You're just done with him. Who would you rather have, Elias Diaz or Gabriel Moreno, who both had good games on Tuesday?
We'll point out Elias Diaz was one of my sleeper hitters for this week. It's not often I include a catcher on that list.
Nice.
But I did this week, and it's going well. And I'm going to say Elias Diaz. Moreno, in spite of his home run today, has just been completely punchless. And, I don't know how long this is going to last for Elias Diaz, but the point is, if unless you have a stud in a one-catcher league, like, you can swap out those guys at will.
Until their next road trip, I would say. Is roughly as long as it will last.
Sure.
In deeper leagues, I see someone here got to my notes, and they wrote Mickey Mehniak.
Wow.
According to Scott, does it again. Went 1-for-3 with his 4th home run, and the guy's on fire. They sat down Taylor Ward once again to get Moniak in the lineup. And Owen Miller is the other name. He went 3-for-4 with a sock and a shoe, his 3rd homer, his 5th steal, and he's batting .347 with an .893 OPS. The quality of contact looks very poor, so I'm not really sure how Owen Miller is pulling this off. But Chris, any thoughts here? Maybe you like meh Niak a little bit more than Scott.
I wouldn't say that, but he's, I don't know, you hit four home runs in 10 games and you're a former number one overall pick and you're hitting the ball hard. Like, it's not to say there's nothing interesting about him. And we have a couple of these every year. Taylor Ward last year being one of them. Brandon Drury last year. There are probably other ones who don't currently play for the Los Angeles Angels that I could point to. But the point is that guys come out of relatively nowhere to have productive seasons with some regularity, and that could be what we're seeing with Mookie Moniak. It's not, I don't think it's likely, certainly less likely than Christopher Morel, but I don't want to write it off entirely.
He has had good numbers in the minors the last 2 years, missed a lot of time with injury, so we're talking small samples in each case, but 308 with a 939 OPS this year, 312 with a 962 OPS last year. So there may be some legitimacy to it. His plate discipline is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the minors, it's been awful. And the fact he's a left-handed hitter, I think the odds are against him emerging as a full-timer, especially since, you know, Taylor Ward is still in the mix. I know Moniak's been playing more than him lately.
But hasn't fetched a lefty yet.
That may just be a hot hand thing. I would be surprised if Moniak cleared the mixed league hurdle, certainly the three outfielder hurdle. I'd be stunned if he cleared the three outfield league hurdle. I think he remains just kind of an interesting low end target.
All right, let's take our final break. And when we return, going to run through some news. I've got pitchers who are slowing down and much more here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back, and big shout out to the 537 people watching us live right now. Hit that like button if you haven't already, and make sure to subscribe to the channel if you haven't done that as well. Some news and notes. Jacob DeGrom threw a 32-pitch bullpen session Monday that apparently went really well. DeGrom is scheduled to throw another bullpen this Friday. Manny Machado took swings off a tee Tuesday. Manager Bob Melvin said he's not sure when Machado will be ready to come off the IL. Carlos Correa was scratched from the lineup with a bruised left heel. Carlos Rodon said his back discomfort is gone and that he's hoping to throw off a mound soon. Remains without a timetable, but some good news in a season where we haven't had much from Carlos Rodon. Matthew Liberatore was available out of the bullpen again on Tuesday. I didn't see if he actually pitched. I hope not. Scott, what's going on here?
And what's going on here is they have six pitchers for five spots, and Liberatore earned a spot. Well, they think they do. Liberatore earned a spot on the roster with his first startup for the minors, where he was, of course, pitching well. So they're not really sure how to make all the pieces fit, and they just keep making Liberatore available in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason why Bobby Miller's at least more attractive than him.
And Matthew Liberatore did not pitch on Tuesday night, but yeah, it looks like they're trying to find any reason not to start Liberatore right now. And I had like a mini rant about it yesterday. I'm not going to get back into it.
I just exempting Adam Wainwright, who is a legend, who will get as many opportunities as he wants for that team for as long as he wants. They've probably got three guys in the rotation they could very easily remove for Matthew Liberatore if they really wanted to. The fact that they don't is somewhat frustrating.
I mean, Jordan Montgomery has, look, he's rock solid. He's a high floor pitcher.
He's
but
fine.
I mean, any of like Jack Flaherty, I get it. You're still trying to squeeze something out of him. Like
Flaherty, I think you leave him. He's shown enough upside. Montgomery, okay. He's been pretty good since getting there. The numbers this season, pretty bad.
Steven Matt's got to go.
Like Steven Matt, just his last two starts have been bad.
I guess they gave Steven Matt a decent amount of money, but like, and even Miles
Michaelis. Matt's can go.
Yeah, like
it kind of feels like the management is they don't want to like own up to the mistake they made by signing Matt, but
an unserious organization right now, the St. Louis Cardinals. That is my opinion. They will figure it out. They are a professional ball club with a good track record. They've earned the benefit of the doubt. The last month or so has been a clown show in St. Louis.
They have turned it around for whatever it's worth, Chris.
I'm not talking about the results on the field. Oh. We're talking process here.
Yes, that I think we could all agree with. Ty France was removed after getting hit by a pitch on his wrist. Brandon Lau was scratched from the lineup due to a stiff neck. Kent Maeda threw another bullpen session Tuesday and is closing in on a rehab assignment. And when he returns, the Twins will either have to go with a six-man rotation or one of Bailey Ober or Louis Varland will likely get the boot. Unfortunately, Dustin May was transferred to the 60-day IL, which ensures he'll be out through the All-Star break. Kyle Muller was optioned to AAA, and Trevor May was activated from the IL. Mickey Moniak, which we mentioned earlier, started again on Tuesday as Taylor Ward remained on the bench. TJ Friedl was activated by the Reds and was leading off on Tuesday, which meant Jonathan India was batting third in the lineup. So perhaps more RBI opportunities for India moving forward if they stick with that alignment. Maybe a few less steals if he's hitting in the middle of the lineup. Kodai Senga had his start moved from Tuesday to Wednesday to prevent him from pitching on normal rest at Coors Field this weekend. Domingo Herman is slated to rejoin the Yankees rotation on Monday in Seattle, which will likely make him a two-star pitcher. Jake Berger took grounders at second base, and it's possible he plays there once Eloy Jimenez returns. The other piece of the puzzle, however, is that Elvis Andrus will start a rehab assignment next week. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that he needs to play, but maybe.
No.
The other piece to that puzzle is Jake Berger did have a golden sombrero tonight.
Ooh.
I got five strikeouts. That's worse than a golden sombrero.
Platinum.
Oh, platinum sombrero. Sorry.
Platinum. My gosh. Matt Mervis was dropped to ninth in the lineup and responded by going 2-for-3 with a walk and hit his second home run. Trevor Larnach was placed on the IL while he recovers from pneumonia. And Denelson Lamet could potentially join the Rockies starting rotation later this week. Pitchers who are coming back down to earth in the month of May. Scott, we had this conversation about Corbin Burnes yesterday. I think it's only fair to have a similar one about Gerrit Cole, who was going up against the Orioles. He went five innings. He allowed five runs. He had more walks than strikeouts. Three walks to two strikeouts, 10 hard hits allowed in this game. Gerrit Cole did not allow a home run in the first seven starts this season. He has now allowed six homers over his last four starts. You dig a little bit deeper, Scott, and a lot of the numbers look a lot like very similar to Corbin Burnes, except Gerrit Cole perhaps has gotten a little bit lucky while Corbin Burnes has gotten unlucky. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, especially with the home runs there, a guy allowed 33 last year and then he had four up until today's game where he allowed two. And that's even with, as I pointed out yesterday, we were kind of forecast at this start for Gerrit Cole yesterday, reacting to Burnes. Gerrit Cole's K per nine rate is down about two. Swinging strike rate is down more than that. More percentage points than two, like three or four. Very similar to Corbin Burnes in those same two areas. And also, like we talked about yesterday, you pointing it out, Frank, the elite class of starting pitchers as a whole has seemed less dominant this year. Like, there was, you know, one of the points I kept driving home preseason and why I was fading pitching is because it seemed like there was a robust middle class returning as the juice ball went away and the overall environment became more favorable to pitchers. Pitching is still driven by the middle class now, but for a different reason than I thought. It's just that there's no upper class anymore, or at least not a well-defined one, not a very deep one. And, you know, the middle class may not go as far into the position as I thought, but the position is still mostly defined by its middle class because there are a few standouts.
All right, a few other pitchers here that have that are coming back down to earth a little bit. Eduardo Rodriguez has allowed 4 runs in each of his past 2 starts. Did have 16 swinging strikes in this one at the Royals. Sonny Gray, in the month of May, he's made 4 starts, 3.72 ERA with a 1.45 WHIP. And Mackenzie Gore had a rough outing against his former team. No revenge game, unfortunately. He allowed 10 hard hits in this one. 4 2/3, 7 hits, 3 runs, 4 walks, 2 homers allowed. And now in the month of May, 4.88 ERA, a 1.79 WHIP. Chris, any thoughts here on Gore, Sonny Gray, and E-Rod?
Well, I guess there was a little bit of a revenge game. The guy who he was traded for got a little revenge. Juan Soto had a 3-hit game, but
yeah, baby.
Yeah, but he's OPS back above 900 now.
Batting 260, Juan Soto, all of a sudden. I mean, it's not where we hope he'd be, but it's pretty good.
What does Juan Soto evolve into, Chris, after Juan Soso?
No, he just goes back to Juan. Okay. It was Juan Succo, Juan Soso. Now he's Juan Soto again. He's earned that right.
Love it.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Sonny Gray, 3.72 ERA, 25 Ks over 19 innings and 4 starts in May. That kind of sounds like Sonny Gray, right? Like, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't think there was like an all new Sonny Gray. He's always had these really impressive stretches and then these really frustrating stretches. And I think the end result will be a pitcher who doesn't go deep into games, gets a lot of strikeouts, and is more or less fine when it comes to the ratio stats. So that's not surprising to me. Mackenzie Gore, what's that?
It counts for a lot more now than it used to since...
It's harder to find that, yeah.
Since there aren't as many high-end pitchers anymore. The middle-end ones look better.
Mackenzie Gore still really looks like a sell high to me. Even the shine has come off a little bit with May, and I think May is probably a little more indicative of what we're going to see from him moving forward. Maybe not quite as bad as a 4.88 ERA and certainly not a 1.79 WHIP. A 1.79 WHIP would be a trip back to AAA at some point. So I don't think that'll be as bad, but I think Mackenzie Gore is probably still a below average pitcher. I just don't think you can thrive being as fastball heavy as he is, even with a deceptive delivery and good velocity from a lefty. Like, I think the fastball is a good pitch, but he's still, you know, throwing it 65% of the time. I don't think it's a viable approach for him. And I don't know if he has the secondaries, particularly, you know, that the pitch to get righties out. I don't know if he has it.
With Mackenzie Gore, worth pointing out in this start, he more than doubled his slider usage. He used it 34%, yes. And it had 7 whiffs and a 49% CSW, but I guess nothing else was really working for him because he still had 4 walks and allowed a lot of hard contact. And I think beforehand, Scott, we were talking, and you kind of comped him to Blake Snell, and that makes a lot of sense to me for Mackenzie Gore. I think we can get some big strikeout games, but... Probably a very high
walk as well. Snellacious. Snellacious right now, Frank.
I do want to go back and just, he's been awful against lefties this year, which is really weird.
That is
for weird. A guy that throws lefty from a weird arm slot, 1195 OPS allowed against lefties in 41 plate appearances, 609 against righties. So did want to correct the record on that one at least.
All right. So maybe he'll actually get a little bit better if he can find a way to get lefties out. Pitching leftovers, let's talk about Dylan Cease. He's turned in 3 quality starts in a row. This one at Cleveland, 6 innings, 2 runs, 3 strikeouts, but only 5 swinging strikes on 88 pitches. And that's back-to-back starts with single-digit swinging strikes for Dylan Cease. Both of them were against the Cleveland Guardians, who typically do make a lot of contact. Spencer Strider was the opposite. He had 22 swinging strikes, 6 innings, 4 runs, 2 earned with 11 strikeouts up against the Dodgers. And Alex Cobb, another quality start at the Twins, 7 innings, 3 runs, 8 strikeouts to 1 walk. Scott, any thoughts here on Cobb, Strider, and Dylan Cease?
It was interesting, Strider's changeup use in this start. You had a good stat about that, Chris, before the show on Strider's changeup.
He... His very first major league start, he threw his changeup about 22% of the time. Since then,
last May
30th, his first major league start.
Yeah.
Since then, he hadn't thrown 10% changeups at all in any start until last start. And now he's done it two starts in a row. It was 12% today. And he threw one changeup in his first 41 pitches, which was the first two innings, as you pointed out. After that, it was like a 20% usage. I think he used it 11 times on his final 60 pitches. So I don't think the math on that is 20%, but whatever it comes out to, 15%.
Yeah. So this I saw real growth here from Strider in this start against a tough Dodgers lineup. They came out and they were just keyed in on the fastball. They were attacking it early in the count, and all four of his runs, two unearned, but four runs in the first two innings, and it looked like it might be a short night for Strider. And then he broke out this changeup to keep them off the fastball and ended up with an 11K outing in six innings. Very typical Strider start. So like it's he develops that extra weapon. He learns that he has that he can turn to when other things aren't working for him. Then maybe Spencer Strider gets even better. I do think we have to talk about Cease a little here too, because even though he's been getting better results lately, you mentioned, Frank, not getting a lot of whiffs, and I stand by what I said after his last start, I believe it was, where if Dylan Cease, you know, the control hasn't really improved. He's still one of the he still allows as many walks as anybody, and to survive that, he needs to be one of the top bat missers in the game, and he hasn't been that this year, not since that first start against the Astros.
He had at least six strikeouts in 20 of his 32 starts last season. He had more than six strikeouts. So seven or more in 20 of 32 starts last season. He hasn't had more than six strikeouts in a start since his second of the season. So April 5th, that is what, nine starts in a row now with six or fewer strikeouts after he had at least seven in 20 of 32 last year. I don't know what the explanation is here. Slider whiff rate on every pitch is down like just a little bit. And it could be that just everything is less effective than it was last season for some reason. But it's certainly concerning, especially because he has not been able to sustain the improvements on hard contact he made last season, where he was 383 expected wOBA on contact in 2021, 313 last year, one of the best marks for any starting pitcher. Back up to 389 this year. So, you know, we're dealing with small sample sizes, even over a full season when it comes to quality of contact for a pitcher, but certainly looks like last year was the outlier and he isn't doing anything to make up for it.
Again, that is Dylan Cease. Let's get into a few hitting leftovers. Josh Jung went 2-for-4 with his 11th home run, added 3 RBI. Paul Goldschmidt, 2-for-4 with a double dong. He's up to 9. Tommy Edman continues his hot month. He went 2-for-3 with a double, a triple, and 3 RBI. All of a sudden, he's up to a .285 batting average, .827 OPS. Corbin Carroll stays hot, went 3-for-4 with 2 doubles and an RBI. Juan Soto, we mentioned it, 3-for-4 with a sock and a shoe in his return to Washington, his 9th homer and his 5th steal. Now in the month of May, he's batting .343 with 4 homers, 4 steals, and an .1116 OPS. Xander Bogaerts snapped an 18-game homerless streak. He went 2-for-5 with his 7th homer. Gunnar Henderson, baby steps. He went 2-for-4 with his 5th homer. It came off of Gerrit Cole. In his last 10 games, he's batting .294 with 2 doubles, 2 homers. Still does have a 37% strikeout rate during that time. Aaron Judge went 1-for-4 with a clutch game-tying homer off of Felix Bautista in the 9th. He's got 8 home runs in 13 games since returning from the IL. Thought it was pretty crazy that his barrel rate and expected slugging percentage are both better this year than they were last year, a season when he hit 62 home runs. So it's crazy. And it's only going to go up after this game, too. Vintage JD Martinez at it once again, went 1-for-5 with his 9th home run. He's got 5 homers in 11 games since coming back from the IL. Pete Alonso hit his league-leading 18th homer. Byron Buxton went 2-for-4 with a sock and a shoe, his 10th homer and his 5th steal. All 5 steals coming in the month of May. And that number one sleeper hitter for Scott White, Jorge Soler, went 2-for-5 with a double and his 13th home run of the season. A few bullpen updates for the White Sox. Kendall Graveman allowed a hit and a walk, but picked up his fourth save. For the Cardinals, Ryan Helsley allowed a hit and two walks, but escaped with his sixth save. For the Diamondbacks, one day it's this, one day it's that. And today, it was Miguel Castro who got the save. It was his fifth of the season. Andrew Chafin got two outs in the eighth before being relieved by Scott McGuff, who got the final out of that inning. For the Orioles, Yennier Cano threw two more scoreless innings with two strikeouts. I mentioned earlier, Felix Bautista gave up a game-tying home run, but did strike out three. For the Yankees, Michael King pitched a ninth with the Yankees down one at the time, and then he pitched the 10th with the game tied. Did not allow that automatic runner, ghost runner. I think someone tweeted at me today, Scott, and called it a Manfred man.
Yeah, the Manfred man, I think, is my favorite. I don't know if given how you guys are on Team Name Tuesdays, I don't know if you actually get that reference.
The Manfred
man and his Earth Band.
What is that?
Their number one hit from like 1970-something, Blinded by the Light.
I know that song.
I mean, I thought it was clever even without a musical tie-in.
But it's got levels. Mm. Yeah, it's got layers.
Like an onion.
Love it.
Layers, except Jerry.
Sweet smelling onion.
Speaking of those Yankees, though, I still believe that Michael King is their best reliever. It's just, will we get to a point that they can use him on back-to-back days? For the Royals, Scott Barlow was unavailable. Aroldis Chapman picked up his second save. For the Padres, Josh Hader picked up his 12th. For the Giants, Camilo Duvall struck out the side for his 13th save, 10 of those coming in May. For the Rockies, Pierce Johnson came in with a two-run lead. He gave up one run, but did escape with his 10th save. And Paul Sewald picked up his 10th save as well. To stream or not to stream, we'll start with Wednesday. And looking up and down the list, we mentioned James Paxton yesterday at the Angels. I think not Cal Quantrill. He's okay. Quantrill against the White Sox is fine.
I said I don't think Kopech's good, but I think you can use him in this one against the Cleveland.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. If you're really desperate, I think Zach Greinke against the Tigers is okay.
And James Paxton probably doesn't belong in the streaming conversation, but as long as he's there, exactly. Yes.
On Thursday, it's a smaller slate of games, and Braxton Garrett is pitching well, but he's in Coors Field, so yeah. I don't really like that. JP Sears at the Mariners, I think, is okay.
It's the best you're going to do.
Yeah.
Like, he's almost certainly not going to get you a win, and that's the most valuable pitching stat of all. But he may give you some strikeouts. Sure.
Yep. And I know he recently threw, I think it was 6 shutout innings against the Mariners, so at least he has that. We're going to wrap there for Scott and Chris. I am Frank. Thanks as always for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.